This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by the Zona Plus, an effective non-drug treatment for high blood pressure. It's a safe, easy way to lower your blood pressure naturally, and it's so effective it works for 9 in 10 people. The Zona Plus is a high-tech smart device that guides you through a patented therapy that's personalized to your unique physiology. To find out more, go to tryzona.com or call toll-free 888-408-6141. As a listener to Intelligent Medicine, you can get $50 off and free shipping. Just use the coupon code Hoffman at checkout at tryzona.com. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, today with Layla Mutin, who's my weekly co-presenter on our Q&A with Layla session. Questions can come to us via radio program at AOL.com, and we're happy to answer all questions related to medicine and nutrition. How are you doing today, Layla?
All right, Dr. Hoffman. How are you?
Good, good. So are you enjoying your summer so far?
Yes, and I want to be more present. Otherwise, it's going to go by too fast, as usual.
So you want to savor the summer.
I want to savor the summer.
Oh, okay. So, I've been very active this summer because it affords me an opportunity to do one of my favorite activities, is I do a lot of swimming in a pool. But that's sort of back and forth, you know, in a chlorinated pool. And that's fine, but open water swimming is a real joy. You know,
absolutely.
You just get out there and you just go, go, go. And on a day where it's not too windy and the waves aren't too choppy and the visibility is good, it's, you know, you're gliding along and you get to see all the, you know, the bottom, you know, with all the fascination of the shells and the seaweed and, you know.
Right.
You feel like an aquatic mammal just churning away there, you know, for yards and yards and yards. It's great. So I'm certainly enjoying it. Also, outdoor bicycling, a little better than indoor spin classes. Lots of mileage on the highways and byways of Long Island. That's been good. Some outdoor running. And overall, you know, summer's, I try to stay healthy all year round, but summer's, I think my health really takes sort of a boost.
And that big boost, I think, is also the longer days and the sunshine and the nice temperate weather and just being outside, I think, is wonderful. Getting back in contact with nature. Forest bathing.
Yes.
It's supposed to be very good for our health, for the soul, all of that.
It's good for your health.
Yeah.
Recent articles that I've talked about, podcasts, that was a very popular post on Facebook, and it's available at drhoffman.com. Can chocolate really be good for you? And I conclude, as it turns out, yes. And I personally consume, it's a little grody for some people. It's 100% hardcore dark chocolate. And for some people, it doesn't really taste like chocolate. It's rather too bitter.
It's not for the regular chocolate lover. It's a different thing altogether.
Yeah.
You know, people are looking for a Snickers bar, but other chocolate lovers.
Yeah, so people write, is 72% isn't good enough? Does it need to be 100%? No, clearly there are benefits to be had, but it's what you get along with the chocolate. So if you want to avoid some of the superfluous calories from the fat and certainly the sugar that they use to sweeten the chocolate,
the dairy.
Then you go for, and the dairy, which interferes with the effects of the high-test cocoa flavanols, that is the way to go. And, you know, I actually find it sort of a brain food. I often consume, a couple of squares of dark chocolate before a broadcast. I feel it, helps my recall. And I know you were reluctant to address this because you thought, you actually threw that question out.
I did.
Because you thought that question was a joke. You thought we were being trolled.
Yes.
But this is for real, Layla.
Uh-huh.
It's snortable chocolate.
Yes, yes. Actually, let me read this email.
Let's get right into this.
Right. This is from Paul.
Yeah.
Hi, Dr. Hoffman and Layla. Apparently, snorting cocoa powder is a new fad. What is your opinion? Dangerous or an efficient way to get beneficial dark chocolate polyphenols into the blood? Yuck.
Yeah. Well, my first observation is that from the beginning of time, man has sought to get high.
Yeah.
And, from from the...
It's a human condition.
Yeah, from those, you know, indigenous tribes in the Amazon who sit in tents and inhale some sort of vapors, you know, coming from burning leaves.
Peyote.
Peyote buttons, all kinds of rituals that people were engaged in. And I remember in the days before I was, eligible to smoke anything, and, you know, drugs weren't as pervasive when I was growing up. You had to be at least, 15 or 16 to get real drugs. So when I was about 11 or 12, the notion of snorting nutmeg was propagated. And there really is kind of a little bit of a hallucinatory effect from nutmeg.
Yeah.
And, you know, putting stuff up the nose, it goes directly to the brain via circulation that's very rich in the nasal passages. And that's one of the ways that you can get stuff directly to your head. And so... Yeah, let's examine it as an objective proposition. Does cocoa inhaled via your nasal passages, is it more effective than eating a couple of squares of dark chocolate? And this has actually provoked an outcry from one of our watchdogs in the Congress, Chuck Schumer, who is head of the Democratic Caucus Senate, who has called for a crackdown on snortable chocolate, one of the perils that may be enticing our youth down a path.
Does cocaine go to the back of the line now, or other?
No. We're making that legal.
Oh,
you see, we want to to minimize drug offenses because those are we want to legalize drugs, but we want to ban snortable chocolate.
Drug
offenders, let them go because they're suffering from a medical condition. Just All right, so Congress is sort of going in reverse on these rules. Schumer wrote a letter to the Food and Drug Administration on Saturday, this last week, asking them to investigate products like Coco Loco, an inhalable food product with caffeine. Okay, well, if it's got caffeine in it, it's going to do something for your head.
Yeah.
He says, quote, "This suspect product has no clear health value." Well, I can think of a lot of things that people do that have no health value.
Absolutely.
You know, so
sure.
I mean, from that standpoint, let's eradicate Oreos.
Yeah.
I think we should pass a law in Congress.
No Oreos
for you.
For you.
Right. So this Grinch-like legislator is saying, I can't think of a single parent who thinks it's a good idea for their children to be snorting over-the-counter stimulants up their noses.
Oh my.
Well, I don't know. You know.
So well, they could snort cleaning products. That's not mentioned,
glue,
right?
Glue, glue, right. it's marketed as a stimulant that aids in focus, feelings of euphoria, and, quote, motivation that is, this is what their language is on the packaging, motivation that is great for partygoers to dance the night away without a crash. That's like a rave drug.
Oh, it's my.
Like, if you can't get ecstasy, then snort
or cocaine.
Snort some chocolate. Actually, the newsflash, the kids are doing ecstasy now. That's that's not even new. Okay.
You know,
so actually, go ahead.
No. And here's what's completely ridiculous to me. Last winter, I went to the local Rite Aid to pick up some cough syrup for my husband. And I had to show identification to buy cough syrup.
Yep. Because of Breaking Bad.
Yeah, exactly. Because in case I'm making meth in our apartment. Oh, my gosh.
Well, you studied nutritional biochemistry.
Oh,
so.
Yeah.
Okay, so here's, I went to Amazon.com and I looked up the product reviews on this product, Coco Loco. And the reviews are 47% of people think it's 5 out of 5, but the average reviews are about 4.5. 3.5 out of 5 stars. 13% of people rating it 1 star, which means it's lousy. Okay, so this is what some people say. One person says, I feel a bit high. I don't know how much of this is due to the placebo effect of me pumping myself up for it. But placebo or not, I'm feeling pretty good right about now. Besides picking up this stuff with a tip of a plastic knife and snorting it and saying out loud to my empty house, wow, what a rush, is just good comedy to me. And all that makes it worth the price. That's pretty good.
Oh.
He gave it a 4 out of 5. And so another person says, it gets you an intense coffee high, but doesn't really give a euphoric feel of superiority or anything that I'd call euphoria. It simply makes you feel energetic. Also, although it doesn't burn your nose, it does feel weird, and it looks chalky white in some parts. So it's definitely more of a stimulant blend rather than a cocoa powder, in my opinion.
Aha!
To conclude, you get what you pay for, and this is pretty good for an alternative to energy drinks if you enjoy putting things up your nose. Now, here's the other thing, is that employers should beware, because if they see an employee who comes into the office with a brownish residue around their nasal passages, they should immediately be checked for cocoflavanol blood levels. Drug testing.
Oh my gosh.
Another person writes, the stuff is great, but I've already pawned my TV. I really wish they would lower the price. I mean, the stuff is great, but I've already pawned my TV, washing machine, and I won't say the words here. And I still don't have enough. I've been to the Nesquik clinic off and on. But it's not the same.
Oh my.
I think that's, okay.
So we can't pick up the regular container of Hershey's 100% cocoa powder and use that?
No, that is not suitable for inhalation.
Okay.
And I think that the men...
Okay.
And this other person is a verified purchase, because they do say that, because they don't want people to rate things that haven't tried them.
Right.
So person's verified purchase.
Yes.
He writes, terrible. Does nothing. Sniff cocoa powder instead. LOL. Waste of money. Okay, so this person says just go to the Nestle's chocolate, powder. But hey, how are you going to prevent people? Because if you ban this, people are going to be snorting,
everything else.
Crest toothpaste. There's something in there probably. Who knows? Technically, do I advise this? I mean, I think that it's sort of a frivolous use of cocoflavanols. I think that some of the benefits of cocoflavanols actually require digestion, and they may work via the microbiome.
Yes.
So that there are certain things, there are certain fractions to it that maybe the psychedelic fractions of chocolate, the bromocryptine and caffeine and those kinds of things. But the flavanols may act via the gastrointestinal tract, and they can't be absorbed via the nasal passages.
Yeah.
So, I really think that...
And I wonder if there's a danger in doing that at all.
We will find out. Mm-hmm. In a couple of years, there will be a new ear, nose, and throat phenomenon, which will be akin to cocaine nose, which will be cocoa nose.
Cocoa
nose. Some people whose nasal passages are inflamed and disintegrating because they've been, they've been addicted to snorting cocoa.
Oh my!
I predict this. Mark my words. We'll take a gentleman's bet here.
All right.
Okay. So you thought that was just.
I thought this was a troll. So Paul, I apologize. I really thought this was like what snorting
you
cocoa powder.
You underestimate our listeners.
I did.
You do.
My bad.
Yes.
My bad. Oh
we
no.
We have only astute listeners to intelligent medicine.
That's right. That's right. So, Paul, my apologies.
Okay.
And thank you for this very funny question.
Yeah.
Funny question in the least.
We want to advise people on this.
Right. Oh, my goodness. Well, here's a little more of a wonky question. This comes from Michael. Hello, Dr. Hoffman. When you interviewed Dr. Colin Ross regarding Dr. Nicholas Gonzalez's model of using theoretic enzymes... for cancer,
proteolytic enzymes, for
the treatment of cancer, it's mentioned that you want to make sure that the pH on the tissue level is where it should be in order to balance out both sympathetic and parasympathetic nervous system. So how do you check that?
Okay, let's explain the question because it's very complicated. In part, in order to understand this question, you have to listen to the interview I did with Colin Ross.
Mm-hmm.
Colin Ross is a physician who is a documenter of the work of the late, great Dr. Nicholas Gonzalez, who was a colleague of mine here in New York, who did unique cancer therapy And it wasn't 100%, but there were remarkable cures.
Yes.
Not only that, but he worked with a lot of patients with challenging conditions, post-Lyme disease, chronic fatigue syndrome. Mm-hmm. And his methodology was absolutely unique. Mm-hmm. It wasn't standard integrative medicine such as you hear on this program. He believed that there were many metabolic subtypes, ranging from parasympathetic dominance to sympathetic dominance. This has to do with the involuntary nervous system, mm-hmm. and that they required different dietary approaches and different supplements. And you can read about it in his book, and I would suggest an intro to that would be my podcast of a few weeks ago with Dr. Yeah. Colin Ross. So the other thing that was unique about the Gonzalez approach is based on the work of a early 20th century doctor named Beard. He used proteolytic enzymes to degrade and break down tumors.
Yeah.
And make the tumors more visible and vulnerable to the immune system. So mm-hmm. in a way, you digested away the tumors by using digestive enzymes. The digestive enzymes had to be pure, strong. They're not mm-hmm. to be taken with food, but away from food in high
Otherwise,
doses.
They digest your food, massive, and that's what you don't want.
Massive doses of digestive enzymes.
Yeah.
So if you go back to chemistry, you know, one of the principles of chemistry is that when you use an enzyme has it's rated for efficiency within a range of pH. Mm-hmm. So it works best between certain pHs. In other words, acidity, alkalinity at extremes will render it inactive.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, how our bodies work. We maintain a very narrow range of pH for optimal enzymatic activity because we have thousands of enzymes working simultaneously in the body. So that's what this person is talking about.
Yeah.
The problem I have found in determining whether a person is acid or alkaline, I think this question boils down to how did you know whether you're acid or alkaline?
Right.
And that is tough mm-hmm. because what's happening inside your cells and in your tissue, say in a muscle or in your heart or yeah. in your brain, can only be determined inside your body or brain.
Right.
And you can't stick a catheter inside your brain or your heart and measure the pH because it would damage the tissue. Mm. So we rely on surrogate markers like saliva.
Yes.
To do a pH strip from your mouth. But that may not indicate what's happening deep within your body.
Right.
Or we look at your urine, and, oh, your urine's very acidic. But what that may mean is that your body may be alkaline, and you're excreting too much acid. You should be retaining it. You may be in an abnormal state.
Mm-hmm.
So I have found, and blood. Oh, what about blood? You know, we draw blood all the time to determine things.
Tightly controlled.
First of all, you have to get arterial blood.
Yeah.
Because venous blood already has changed its pH, and arterial blood sticks are hard to get. But let's say we do arterial blood sticks, but they still don't tell you what's going on in the tissue. They mirror the tissue pretty carefully, but they don't tell you exactly what's happening in the tissue.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't know how practical it is. Now, Dr. Gonzalez had a mysterious way of determining this.
Yeah.
And
if they were sympathetic or parasympathetic dominant?
Some of it was based on ascertaining symptoms and listening to what the patient said, and some of it was based on a technique called radionics, which is very controversial. It's a form of hair analysis, and it's something that was much maligned about his practice.
Hmm.
I don't understand it. And
Hair analysis.
Yeah. I don't want to get into the weeds on this because this is a wonky question, but it's worth discussing because I think it's a fascinating concept because it helps us understand why different strokes for different folks.
Mm-hmm.
So in his scheme of things, people who are sympathetic dominant could do well with a vegetarian diet, and people who are parasympathetic dominant do well with a heavy fat and animal protein diet.
Yeah.
And it turns out that I was pretty parasympathetic dominant.
Mm.
My primary symptoms were allergies and sensitivities, parasympathetic symptoms. And therefore, I matched best with a protein-based diet.
Wow. Wow. So, in determining, the other thing is, when he talks about, All right, we know the blood is tightly controlled, and it's very interesting what you just said. I figure, well, with circulation, it's going to translate to the tissues, that tightly controlled pH.
Right.
But apparently not, because it's the arterial blood
that is more... Just even listening to what I said, he said, Ron, you're too alkaline.
Huh.
And I said, oh, I thought that was the optimal state, to be as alkaline as you can be.
Right.
You know, drink...
That's
you know,
what a lot of people still believe.
Eat salads and drink green juices.
Yeah.
And
your urine will be alkaline for a while.
I was walking down the street and I saw them unloading from a truck this pallets and pallets of this oxidated, you know, some special water. You know, like you can't just sell water anymore. It has to be like
alkaline
special,
water.
Alkaline water. pH 8.5, very alkaline. Mm-hmm. But for some people that's great. But for me, who was already too alkaline, taking more alkaline water would not be good.
Right, right.
According to, again,
yeah,
this is not
yeah.
necessarily the end all and be all.
Right.
According to the Gonzales scheme, which is derived from Dr. Donald Kelly's metabolic typing.
Yeah.
And all this is, you know, as you know, you never study this in nutrition at all. This
no.
is not mainstream no. nutrition at all.
Mm-mm.
But it's a concept that continues to fascinate me, although I don't use this method because I find it difficult to determine, is there an objective way to determine if a person is too parasympathetic, too sympathetic?
Yeah.
Is there an objective way to measure their acidity, their alkalinity? I find that that's hard to get a
handle on. Because it changes. It's not stagnant either. You know, for instance, a lot of people are using urine test strips. So if you have a kale smoothie that morning, you're going to find your urine is more alkaline for the next few hours. But then it will kind of come back to, you know, the range of normal. It could be anywhere from 5 to 8.5 or something like that.
And there's some paradoxes here. The foods that seem to be acidic, like lemon juice,
they're not acidic.
They're alkaline.
They're alkaline. Yeah. Yes.
And you know what is the most acidic thing of all? It's not meat. People think it's meat, but it's sugar.
Yeah.
Ends up sugar and refined carbohydrates end up being well, especially soda, which is loaded with acid. It's contains phosphoric acid. If you look at the secret ingredient in Coke, you know, that is locked up in a safe somewhere, it's phosphoric acid. And phosphoric acid is an acidifying agent. And so you drink a lot of soda, eat a lot of candy, and have a lot of white bread, and you're going to be pretty acidic.
Yeah, and all those foods or non-foods you just mentioned are all vegetarian, aren't they?
Yep.
That wasn't a meat product that you mentioned, white bread and Coca-Cola. These are all non-foods anyway.
Indeed.
But no, this is a fascinating question from Michael.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, thought-provoking, not that actionable,
yes,
in my opinion.
Yes. So getting a balance of both, I think Mother Nature has given it to us.
Yeah.
Animal foods are primarily acidic.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have our produce, our vegetables and fruits.
So what I note is that... I remember there was a study looking at the acidity, alkalinity that they measured based not on a physical measurement, but based on the components of the diet. They actually did an analysis with a diet analysis, what went in terms of the net alkalinity or acidity of the foods. And they looked at so-called primitive tribes or hunter-gatherers. And what they found is that many of them were absolutely not vegetarians.
Mm.
They, you know, and this is conforms to the research I've been doing lately about primitive man, or our forebears, you know, the Neanderthals and the early Homo sapiens, is that they had a diet where meat. We tend to exaggerate the importance of meat in thinking about them because we tend to think of them as bagging these giant mammoths, and you know, I remember as a kid I saw the picture of this group of proto-humans descending on a recently killed mammoth and literally tearing large strips of flesh, and they're all bloody and they were eating this raw, you know, mammoth meat. That was maybe something they did from time to time. That was certainly something they did.
Sure.
But the vast majority of their food was gathered by the women, and it was...
they gathered, right?
It was roots and berries and insects,
leaves,
kind of yucky things.
Yeah.
Worms, perhaps, grubs. But also grains. They had wild grains, mm-hmm. and they knew
which
how to
needed
pound,
a lot of processing,
a lot of pounding.
Yeah,
the wild grains gave them tooth decay because they were starchy, and they also because they were ground on stone implements, they had sand or grit in them, and they wore away the enamel. So
yeah.
Literally, Neanderthals had dental problems. Also, the food was extremely tough to chew.
Mm-hmm.
They had very powerful jaws, big teeth, mm-hmm. but their tooth surfaces were very worn, and they had cavities.
Yeah.
You know. So, what's interesting is, coming back to that study that was in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition years ago, is that the net alkalinity, acidity of these primitive tribes was balanced.
Yes.
Even though they had a fairly high intake of animal protein, because they were not just eating steak and then having, a French roll or something.
They were eating organ meats as well, which have a higher fat content.
Mm-hmm.
Fats are primarily neutral.
Okay.
The ones that aren't are the vegetable oil fats.
Right.
Interestingly.
Oh, okay.
So more of the saturated fats are a little more neutral.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
So let's say you're following a paleo diet, you know, you're eating a lot of animal protein. Certainly you must eat a lot of vegetables and some fruit to counteract the acidity of that.
Right.
That program.
That's where nature takes care of it for us. Enter newer foods to civilization where we have grains and dairy. These are both acidic food groups.
Yes, generally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, generally, yeah.
Good. Okay, well, we need to pause because we divide our podcast into two parts. We invite your questions. Questions come to radioprogram@AOL.com. And we're having a little bit of a summer lull. Not that we don't have questions, but we want to encourage you to send questions. So use your imagination. Come up with something that can be grist for the mill for our weekly Q&A with Layla. And we'll continue in just a moment.